Welcome to tonight's class. This is our class on exercise, our more efficient, effective exercise class. So what I'm going to do tonight is sort of talk about exercise just a little bit from a really general perspective, and then I'm going to run through all the different types of exercise and then talk about how to bring them together. And there's actually more types, more approaches to exercise than most people imagine. But the first thing that I want to say about exercise is there's a pretty consistent way to monitor whether what you're doing is really serving your body well. And that's by how you feel after you're warmed up while you're doing it and then after you're done. So many people have this mentality with exercise that you have to push yourself and that, you know, no pain, no gain is kind of the way I would sum it up. And absolutely not the case. In fact, for most of our goals, given the level of fitness that most of us start off at, if you're really exerting yourself and you're putting yourself in pain, you're pushing too hard. And the actual reality is that most people aren't willing to push themselves that hard. And the whole idea that you have to push really hard either encourages people not to exercise, or they do it a few times and they feel miserable and then they don't do it again. Whereas realistically, for almost everyone's goals, you should feel pretty good doing what you're doing after you're warmed up. And when you finish, you should feel better than when you start. And we're going to get a little bit more into why as we go through tonight's class. But the first thing I want to say is exercise, it should be reasonably enjoyable and reasonably pleasant. Really, really, truly. And if it's not, you're putting a big psychological hurdle in your way, because if it feels bad and you're not liking it, you're not going to want to do it as much. But you're also probably exerting yourself too much. So when it comes to exercise, less is more. It doesn't take a lot to begin changing your body. And if you exercise intelligently, if you do smart exercise, you can get better results with much, much less effort. And that's what tonight's class is about. It's about how to get maximum results with pretty much a minimum of effort. And the only time there's an exception to that is when you're dealing with like elite performance training. And if you really want to train for a sport or you're looking to be able to run really fast or something like that, then you got to really push your body. But for most of us, most of our goals to be healthy, to be fit, to lose weight, doesn't take a lot. So we talked briefly last week about genetics and how there's this big myth that you kind of can't change your genes. And I do want to revisit that topic briefly with reference to exercise. Basically, exercise, the way that exercise changes your body, really does occur at the genetic level. And that's the reason why less is more. And that's the reason why intelligent exercise is more effective than pushing your system too hard. Because ultimately, everything we're looking to accomplish with exercise is an adaptation. It's an adaptation. So weight loss is an adaptation. Building muscle is an adaptation. Improving cardiovascular health is an adaptation. And exercise works by creating adaptations. So you go to the gym and you push some weights around, and then you get an adaptation to that, your muscles grow. Or you run on the treadmill and you get an adaptation to that, you diminish the amount of fat in your body. It's not like the exercise you do in and of itself creates those effects. It's not the action of curling a weight that causes your bicep to grow, and it's not the action of running on a treadmill that burns fat. It's the way that your body responds or adapts to the exercise stimulus. So we'll look at this briefly again. You go in the gym. You start doing some curls. Those curls create mechanical stress in your muscles, and that stress sends chemical signals to the heart of your muscle cells and basically says, hey, guys, we need to adapt to this stress. Those signals actually turn on genes that produce proteins that allow you to grow bigger, stronger muscles. And in a nutshell, that's how all exercise works. Every form of exercise creates signals that alter the way the genes perform that then change chemistry and change the proteins in our bodies. And it's those changes that really transform us in response to exercise over time. So that's going to be our theoretical framework for tonight's class. One, you got to feel good when you do it. You got to enjoy yourself, or it's a big psychological barrier. And if you push yourself so hard that you don't feel better when you finish than when you start, you've overdone it. And the reason is exercise is going to work for you because your body adapts to it. And if you burn yourself out, if you push too hard, your system doesn't adapt. So the key with exercise is to stimulate your body in an appropriate way with appropriate intensity to cause the adaptation that you want, which is a genetic change, which creates chemical changes, which changes your body. And that's all we need for theory. We don't need to belabor any of that. It's just one of the things that's important to keep in mind is it is these genetic and chemical changes that cause the transformation that exercise ultimately creates, and they take a little bit of time. So that's the reason a lot of people don't see results for 4 to 6 weeks. Usually we tell people wait 6 to 8 weeks to expect results from a new program. And as you do wait 6 to 8 weeks for a new program to take effect, you're giving your system time to make these adaptive changes at the genetic and chemical level and to allow whatever exercise you're doing to create the shifts that you're looking to get. So with all that said, I want to talk about the different forms of exercise that exist. And even if you've exercised a lot, I think you'll get some benefit out of this. We're really going to go back to basics. We're going to talk about, you know, what is it that we're actually doing that we're calling exercise? And then what are the benefits of this? What are the effects that it has on our bodies? And what are the things that we need to be conscious of? So the first form of exercise I want to highlight is resistance training or weightlifting. We use the word weightlifting to talk about any time we're sort of moving heavy stuff, but a better term is resistance training. Because if you're, say, pushing, you know, a cable on a machine or something like that, you're not actually lifting weights, but you're pushing against resistance. So this word resistance training, it covers things like curls and squats. It covers exercises on cable machines. It covers anything where you're using your muscles to push against load. And the emphasis is on muscular development and not on a cardiovascular workout. Pretty much everybody, without exception, needs to be doing this kind of exercise, needs to be doing resistance training. It has many benefits. Yes, it builds muscle, so it can actually increase the size or the density of the muscle on your body. And the way in which you do it will determine the type of effect on your muscle your exercise has. So a lot of women especially have concerns that if they lift weights, they're going to add bulk or get too big. For most women, it's not a realistic concern. But one thing to keep in mind is that the weight and the number of reps that you do actually affects this. So you may be familiar with this terminology, sets and reps. If you're not, shoot me an email. I'll send something out that explains it. But in a nutshell, when we lift weights for around 8 to 12 repetitions, and we lift a lot of heavy weight, that's ideal for building strength and for building size. If you're concerned, you should do more reps. You should do 12 to 15 repetitions. Regardless, you're going to get stronger, but you're not going to build size. But no matter how many repetitions of weights you choose to do, whether it's in the 8 to 12 range, which would be the guy looking to build muscular size, 12 to 15 or even up to 20 reps, which would be a woman looking to get more lean and toned, or you could do fewer reps. If you lift in the 5-6 range, that's just for pure power. You're actually not going to build as much muscle. You're going to put on more power if your goal is just to get stronger without getting bigger. Anything that you're doing with weightlifting is paying benefits far beyond muscular conditioning. One of the first benefits that it pays is it increases bone density. And many of us have concerns about bone density, more often women than men. But men, you know, there's a reason to think about it as well. Weightlifting is probably the best thing that you can do to ensure healthy bones as you age. It also actually increases joint integrity. The action of lifting weights and places stress on the joints as well as the musculature, and your joints tend to adapt and become stronger and more resilient. But there are a number of other benefits to weightlifting that don't get highlighted quite as often. One of the big ones is increased metabolism. So when you lift weights and you build new muscle tissue, a pound of muscle burns about 50 calories a day at rest. Now, a pound of fat is about 3,000 calories. So if you think about 1 pound of muscle burning 50 calories a day, over the course of a week, that's around 350 calories. If you put on 10 new pounds of muscle, you're burning the number of calories in a pound of fat every week without doing anything. So you're actually burning an extra pound of fat each week in terms of caloric expenditure just by the added muscle. And most of us, you know, we kind of like to eat a little more and have to worry about calories a little bit less. Well, muscle is a fantastic way to be able to eat more because muscle is a very active tissue and it uses up the calories that you eat. So when you build muscle, you're really contributing to any weight loss goals because you're creating this tissue that's going to be burning calories for you all the time. Now, of course, the actual action of lifting weights also burns calories. And ultimately, you talked about the fact that weight loss isn't about calories in versus calories out, but metabolism is a factor in weight loss. So when you lift weights, it lifts your metabolism, it changes your biochemistry, it causes you to truly expend more calories in a way that's adaptive and sustainable over time, and so muscular development is fantastic for fat loss. Now, a very typical pattern that happens, especially for women, again, when they start working out, is you go to the gym and you start lifting a lot of weights and you do a lot of cardio, and 8 to 12 weeks later, you say, I haven't lost a pound, but I've lost a dress size. So the scale hasn't changed, but I've gone from a 12 to a 10, or a 10 to an 8, or an 8 to a 6. And what's happened in that instance is you probably lost about 5 pounds of fat and gained 5 pounds of muscle. And that's fantastic. You're now healthier, you don't look any thicker because muscle is really lean, and especially if you distribute it evenly over your body, you're not going to notice, you know, any bulk from that. And your metabolism's higher. So you haven't lost weight, but you've lost fat, and you're ahead of the game when it comes to future weight loss because you're now carrying all this additional muscle that's going to be burning calories for you all the time and increasing your basal metabolic rate. So that's another fantastic contribution that building muscle makes to the body. Another really interesting thing that lifting weights helps you do is it helps you sleep more deeply. So weightlifting creates a kind of fatigue that tends to encourage the production of melatonin, which is the brain's sleep chemical. And when you do a pretty thorough weightlifting workout sometime during the day between, say, you know, 6:30 a.m. and 7 o'clock at night, by that night, you've actually made chemical changes in your body that are going to cause you to secrete more of this sleep hormone, melatonin. You're going to get a deeper night's sleep. And that deeper night's sleep plays all sorts of benefits. When you sleep more deeply, energy levels are better, you feel better, you make more good chemistry, it's easier to lose weight. And a corollary of this is that weightlifting tends to improve energy levels and mood, and that may be because you sleep more deeply. So weightlifting has a positive impact on energy levels and mood. And the fact of the matter is, anything you're doing that mobilizes calories in your body, anything you're doing that gets your blood sugar going and kind of gets you up and gets you physically engaged, it's always going to benefit your sense of well-being. So there's a psychological payoff to staying engaged with weightlifting as well. So that's pretty much the picture when it comes to lifting weights. I'm going to talk a little bit about cardiovascular exercise, and then I'm going to come back and revisit how to actually do this stuff, how to actually design programs, and we're going to talk about programs for beginners and intermediate people and really advanced people. So we're going to get back into the practical, you know, how often do I lift and what exercises do I do and stuff like that. We'll come back to that because it's easier to talk about it integrated with cardiovascular exercise. So the other big branch of the exercise world outside of weightlifting is cardio or cardiovascular exercise. And the reason it's called cardiovascular exercise is initially the benefits of doing stuff like running and swimming and getting on the ellipse and biking and walking up and down hills. The initial benefits that the scientific community came to agree on was that it was really good for your heart health and your vascular health. But it's actually good for everything, of course. And cardio is probably the most important form of exercise. I think it is more important than weightlifting. So I would define cardio as anything you do that gets you out of breath and gets your heart rate up for a sustained period of time. Fast walking is a form of cardio. You know, certainly all the machines, biking, ellipses, all that's cardio. Playing sports is a form of cardio. Anything you're doing that gets yourself out of breath and gets your heart rate up. Well, why do you want to get yourself out of breath and get your heart rate up? This, first of all, relates back to the central theme of our course, which is that the human body only works right when it engages in the activities and the lifestyle and the patterns that were present during its design. Throughout all of human history, our ancestors were moving, and they were moving in specific rhythms, and they were getting out of breath, and they were getting, you know, their blood flowing, and they were getting adrenaline pumping. And our DNA evolved to coordinate all the function in our bodies properly only when we do that. So you actually have to do cardio to make your body work right. It's not a matter of keeping the pounds off. It's a matter of nothing in you works if you don't get this stimulus. And we also talked a bit briefly, and I think it's such an incredible statistic. You only have 30,000 different genes. And within 20 minutes or so of exercising, around 1,000 genes change their activity. Around 1,000 genes turn on in ways that they weren't on before or turn off in ways that they weren't off before. And so the action of exercising actually regulates your genome. And since your genome makes everything, it makes your chemistry and your proteins and all the stuff that goes into life, the action of exercising is it's turning on and off the fundamental switches of life. That's DNA, that's genes, so the fundamental switches of our biology. So cardio, utterly essential. Now, in terms of the actual concrete, tangible benefits of cardio, the picture sounds similar to that with weightlifting. When you do cardio right for a sustained amount of time, it increases your basal metabolism. So you burn more calories all the time, and it is easier to stay lean. It also creates biochemical changes in your body that make it easier to stay lean. Doing cardio the right way helps you sleep more deeply, has a profound impact on energy levels and mood, and it's also been associated with the prevention of a number of different diseases, not just coronary artery disease. There's evidence linking lower cancer incidences with increased exercise. And, you know, we could go through different diseases like Crohn's disease and cancer and diabetes, and we could talk about the specific molecules and what's called the pathophysiology of the diseases and why it is that something as simple as going for the right kind of run three or four times a week can help prevent and even ameliorate these conditions. But I want to draw it back to the simplicity of the idea that the human body is built to work. Disease happens when something goes wrong, and the body doesn't know how to work right if we don't treat it right, because it didn't evolve to. So cardio, critical, absolutely critical. Can't emphasize it enough. If there is one change that you add to your life from this course, one thing that you do differently, take on doing some form of cardio three times a week, more important than eating. Because the thing with the eating is that eating is unbelievably powerful, but it's more complicated, and to get the results, you have to be at least a little bit disciplined. You have to actually not eat junk food and eat more whole foods. If you are not exercising and you start exercising 20 to 25 minutes three times a week, the impact on your life can be extraordinary. A little statistic. There's something that gets calculated called the number needed to treat, which is a way of looking at the effectiveness of drugs. So what a number needed to treat is it basically says how many people need to get this drug in order to have something good happen or prevent something bad. So, for instance, if you had a drug for, say, skin rashes, the number needed to treat would be how many people do you need to give this drug to before you see one skin rash go away. Let's say you take 20 people, and you give those 20 people this new drug, and one person, their skin rash goes away. The number needed to treat would be 20. You had to give 20 people the drug to get one skin rash to go away. And you would then anticipate that if you gave 100 people the drug, five skin rashes would go away. One in 20. That's the number needed to treat of 20. So statin drugs, like Mevacor and Lipitor and those drugs, they're meant to prevent heart attacks. And the number needed to treat that's been calculated by different studies is somewhere between maybe like 80 and 250. It depends on which studies you read. Which means somewhere between 80 and 250 people need to get these drugs to prevent one heart attack. The number for exercise is 4 for people at high-risk groups for cardiovascular disease. You need to get 4 people to start exercising to prevent a heart attack. Mind-blowing statistic. By the best estimates, it's 20 times as effective as a statin drug. And we're talking gentle exercise, 3-4 times a week, 20 to 30 minutes. Can't emphasize it enough. If you're already exercising, listen to this from the perspective of how can I exercise smarter. But if you're not, get the cardio in. And if you're not doing any now, it can be walking. So with that said, that's my huge plug for the importance of cardiovascular exercise. It's absolutely the most important. I want to take a step back and look at resistance training and look at cardio and talk about how you put them together effectively and then how you actually design a program for yourself, or maybe not even design a program for yourself, but how you know to walk into a gym and understand the basics of what you need to be doing when and how much and how often to get optimal results. So I'm going to take this from the perspective of a beginner, an intermediate, and an advanced person. I'm going to start off with the beginner because most of the rules will apply across all three categories, and then I'll just briefly touch on scaling things up for the intermediate and the advanced. So for the beginner, you want to shoot to work out 3 times a week if you're not exercising regularly now. And you want to space them out. Give a day of rest between if possible. You could do Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Monday, Wednesday, Saturday. If you need to, do Monday, Tuesday, Friday. But give yourself some breaks in between. You want to do a combination of resistance training and cardio. And you always want to follow the same order of how you exercise. You always want to follow the same pattern. This is one of the simple golden rules to take away for exercise for the rest of your life. You always want to do a cardio warm-up between, say, 6 and 10 minutes. So that means getting on a bike or an ellipse or a treadmill or doing something to get your heart rate up and get out of breath, and that's what you do to begin with. And you want to get yourself out of breath, and you want to break a gentle sweat. That's your warm-up. After you warm up, you want to go do resistance training, some form of resistance training. So you want to do things like chest presses or lat pulls, or you want to go to a body chisel class or a body sculpt class or do pull-ups. There's a massive variety of different resistance training exercises. And I'm going to send out a sample program and a brief guide to those tomorrow, and this is a really great sample program for kind of a beginner intermediate level, and I'll send out some notes on customizing it as well. But you always want to do your warm-up, and then you want to do your resistance training program. When it comes to the resistance training, and this is for beginners, you want to shoot for 3 times a week. You should be looking to resistance train for about 30 to 35 minutes tops, maybe even 25 to 30 minutes. And you want to work all the major parts of your body pretty much twice a week, on the upper body and once a week on the lower body. So what that looks like is, let's say on a Monday you go, and on a Monday you're going to work your chest and your back and your shoulders and your abs. Those are the major parts of your upper body. And you're just going to basically do one exercise for each body part. So like a basic chest exercise is like a chest press. A basic back exercise is a row or a lat pull. A basic ab exercise is a sit-up, and a basic shoulder exercise is an overhead press. And again, I'll send out programs detailing all of this. And you would want to do 3 sets of each of those exercises on Monday and on Friday. And that's it for your resistance training. And as a beginner, that'll be enough. 3 sets, a set is a group of reps. Reps are like the number of times you do something. So when you curl a dumbbell, you bring it from the bottom, up, and then back down, that's 1 rep. If you put 10 or 12 of those together, that's 1 set, if you're not familiar with the terminology. You want to do 3 sets for each body part. And that should take, 20, 25, 30 minutes. After you do your resistance training for 20, 25 minutes, you're going to move on and you're going to do your main cardiovascular workout. And your main cardiovascular workout is going to be a program on a machine, or you can go join a class, or you can go running outside. It's going to be anything where your intention is to get yourself out of breath and get your heart rate up and keep it there for, again, 20 to 25 minutes. So our whole program length is going to come in somewhere around an hour. You may go over an hour a little bit. You may go under an hour. But it's always going to go warm up, lift weights, and then cardio. The reason that we do it in that order has to do with the energetics of your body. So your body has 2 primary stores of energy. You store energy in fat, and you store energy in sugars, stored sugars. Sugars are the preferred fuel for weightlifting. Fat is the preferred fuel for cardio. If you try to weightlift off fat, it doesn't work. And if you do cardio off sugars, you burn up your sugars and you don't burn any fat. So a lot of people, when they go to the gym, they get there and they do 25 minutes on a treadmill. And all they do is burn through their stored sugar. And then they go and lift weights, and there's no more sugars left in the body because you don't really have that much stored sugar. And they try to lift weights with fat. It doesn't work that well. They don't get a great workout, and they don't really burn much fat. On the flip side, if you do the weights first, you burn through your stored sugars. That fuels your weightlifting workout. You get a better weightlifting workout. And then when it's time to do cardio, you will tap into your body fat, and you'll burn body fat with the cardio. And while I keep saying the cardio doesn't ultimately work by burning body fat, and it's not like every time you burn body fat, you reduce your body fat, and that's how you lose weight over time, the burning of the fat still matters. Because when you burn the fat, it changes your biochemistry, and it does get the fat circulating through your system and running through your metabolism. So you do want to burn fat with your workouts, even though over time it's your biochemistry that's going to dictate your fat loss. So that's the reason for that order. Warm up, lift weights, then cardio, and you keep it religious. And when it comes to the cardio and how you do it, you always want to do some form of interval training. Interval training is up-down. It means you take your heart rate up, and then you bring it back down. And you take it up, and you bring it back down. So you may be familiar with classes like rev and like spinning. Those classes are okay. Or you can do cardio on your own. And I'm going to send out programs, little written programs that you can put on machines in the gym. And the idea is you never want to move at a consistent pace. So you don't want to like go for a run and jog at the same pace for 25 minutes. You want to go and you want to speed up and slow down and speed up and slow down. You want to get yourself out of breath and then recover and get yourself out of breath and then recover. And that will help you burn more fat. It'll help you regulate your heart rate more effectively. And it's ultimately far better for your physiology because it's the way that our ancestors moved. That kind of rhythm is consistent with the movement rhythms that human beings have been moving in for many, many years. And it has an optimal effect on creating the kind of gene expression changes that we talked about. And one really simple thing to bear in mind, during the How Fat Gets Burned class, we talked about the idea that adrenaline is actually kind of the key that unlocks fat cells and puts fat into your circulation and then allows fat to get burned. Well, adrenaline is stimulated by bursts of intense activity, and then you have to have periods of recovery for the adrenaline to take its effect. So when you do exercise in intervals, you create that burst, recover, burst, recover, burst, recover rhythm, and it'll allow you to tap fat a lot more effectively. So I'm going to just briefly review all that. We talked about starting with a warm-up, moving into resistance training, and then finishing with cardio. For your warm-up, you want to get out of breath and break a sweat. And you can even do intervals in your warm-up. You can get on your treadmill, jog for a minute, then run for a couple minutes, then slow down to a jog, then run, then slow down to a walk, and finish a little fast run. Then you're going to start your weightlifting. If you are a beginner, 20 to 25 minutes of weightlifting. You want to lift your whole upper body twice a week and your lower body once a week. So say Monday and Friday, you're going to do your chest, your abs, your shoulders, and your back. And then on Wednesday, you're going to do your lower body. You can do things like, you know, squats and hamstrings. And I'm going to send you written descriptions of all this stuff so you can start putting it into practice. Also, interestingly, just a side tip, if you ever want to find exercises, YouTube is a great resource now. So if you're ever curious about an exercise, like let's say I use the word squat and you don't know what that is, go on YouTube and type in the word, you know, squat at the gym. Or if I say overhead press, type in overhead press and you'll get a video tutorial, loads of video tutorials. I'm going to send you text and picture tutorials, but YouTube has video tutorials and they're really, really useful. So then after your weightlifting workout, where you're doing about 3 sets for each body part, somewhere in the 10 to 12 rep range if you're a beginner, you're going to do your 20 to 25 minutes of cardio, and you're going to do that all 3 days, the Monday, Wednesday, and the Friday that you work out, and that's your workout, and that's your week. And that's really optimal. And you can do that for 8 to 12, maybe even 16 weeks. And if you're a novice exerciser, it's going to begin to really transform your body. It's a fantastic basic formula. It's not the only way to go. There are lots of exercise classes out there, and I think exercise classes have a lot of value. And the classes that have you do resistance training type motions, kind of the body pump or the chisel classes where you're doing push-ups and curls and sit-ups like that, you can apply the same logic to those classes. So if you know you're going to do one of those classes, you can say, I'm going to do it on a Monday and a Friday, and I'm going to give myself those 3 days of rest and recovery between working those muscles. And you can even apply some of the same savvy logic. You can go in and do a 6 to 8 minute cardio warm-up, and then you can go into the class and do your upper body stuff. And maybe the class goes on longer than you want it to, you could actually duck out and do some cardio. Some classes integrate weightlifting and cardio for you. So you do stuff like, you know, do your curls and you do your overhead presses and then you stop and you run in place or you do jumping jacks. That's fine. If you enjoy that and it motivates you, it's fantastic. You're getting an integrated workout. You're getting resistance training and cardiovascular training in the same workout, and that's really ultimately all that matters. But I do believe that ultimate freedom as a gym goer comes from understanding the principles by which you exercise effectively, and they're not that complex, what we're talking about tonight, and knowing how to show up and do what's good for your body on your own. So I'm going to suggest that you try following the program that I'm sending and adapting it over the course of the next few weeks, and then you can always get back to me with any questions. Always happy to field questions via email. So that's the big picture when it comes to weights and when it comes to cardio. If there's a few big-time take-home points to remember, they would be, one, less is usually more. You don't want to exhaust yourself. If you're lifting and your muscles are super, super tired, you know what? Stop and chill out. And if you go back to lift 3 days later and you're still really sore, lift really gentle. And the same is true with your cardio workout. You want to alternate between bursts of intensity and recovery, but you never want to be dragging yourself. You never want to be agonized. You never want to be exhausted. You don't want to be pushing yourself to finish. You should be working out at a level of intensity where after your warm-up, you feel pretty good, and then you continue to feel pretty good, and you finish feeling alert and alive and refreshed. And that's the sign of an optimal intensity workout. It's that you feel more alert, alive, and refreshed when you finish than when you began. That means that you've mobilized adrenaline, you put some more sugar out into your blood in a good way, you've gotten your cells working, you've gotten your brain chemistry firing, and you haven't pushed yourself too far. And if you exercise at that level of intensity, it's going to create the ideal conditions for the adaptations, which are ultimately how exercise works. Exercise works through adaptation, not because you go and do a bunch of stuff to yourself at the gym. It works based on how your body reacts when you're done. And when you have that optimal, I feel better than when I started feeling, you created the optimal signaling in your body that's going to create the adaptations that you want. So that's the big picture with weights and cardio. And interestingly, that's kind of what most people think about when they think about exercise. And I wanted to spend some time talking about some other dimensions of exercise that people don't think about. The most obvious is flexibility. Very commonly acknowledged, not as commonly practiced. Flexibility is stretching. And most people think about stretching and they kind of think I should stretch my hamstrings and I kind of know I should stretch and I don't want to get injured. Well, there's actually a lot more to flexibility than just not getting injured. One thing that's really great to think about with flexibility is that it can prevent and ameliorate all sorts of different pain. So headaches, back pain, glute pain, shoulder tension, a lot of the common pain that we live with is actually tied to muscular tension. And when your muscles are tight, it pulls on your tissues. And especially when the muscles of the head and neck are tight, it actually pulls on the skull. And it can create all sorts of pain syndromes. Back pain and headaches are probably the two most common. And learning how to stretch in the right way can actually begin to alleviate some of that pain. So another one of the things I'm going to be sending out this week is a stretching tutorial that describes basic stretches for all different parts of the body. And you can kind of, you know, take stock of yourself. And if different things hurt, you can figure out, okay, you know, my back does hurt. Maybe I need to stretch these muscles. And I'll give you a little bit of guidance on that. Also, interestingly, stretching affects posture. So lots of us kind of walk with a slump in our shoulders. Well, you're not just built that way. You're not going to be that way forever. For a lot of us, our heads jut forward. Again, that's not like the way your body's built. That's about the tensions in your muscles. And as you change the tensions in your muscles, you can change your posture. And for those of us who kind of want to look good, you know, being tall and erect is very attractive. In fact, fixing posture can frequently do more for someone's appearance than losing some weight. And it's simple and it's really healthy. And also, as you improve your posture, it takes tension off joints. So that's another factor with flexibility. Also, interestingly, flexibility affects muscular strength. So if you want to be strong, when your muscles are tight, you're not strong. Tight muscles compromise the strength of the muscles they pull against. And what I mean by that is that every muscle in the body pulls against other muscles. So, for instance, your quadriceps pull against your hamstrings. The quadriceps extend your leg. Your hamstring curls your leg. When your hamstrings are really tight, it kind of, you know, it pulls your leg backwards into a flex. It pulls your calf up towards your butt. That actually takes away strength from your quadriceps. So if you want to get stronger, flexibility can actually contribute to strength. And then the last benefit of flexibility that I wanted to highlight is balance. Believe it or not, flexibility actually affects your capacity to balance. So as we age, balance is important, and for athletes, balance is important. And a big part of balance is the tensions in our muscles. Ultimately, that, of course, is how our brain balances our body. So, for instance, your ability to stand on one foot is affected by the flexibility of your whole body. But even beyond, you know, kind of quirky stuff like your ability to stand on one foot, balance really extends to the performance of everyday life tasks. So you're concerned about spraining ankles or falling down or anything like that, that's all a balance issue. And ultimately, the tensions in your muscles affect that. So a healthy level of flexibility delivers all sorts of benefits, and it's an important part of fitness. It's not as important, to my mind, for most people, as resistance training and cardiovascular exercise. So if you're new to exercise and you don't want to take on too much all at once, take on the resistance training and take on the cardio. If you're already doing resistance training and cardio and you're comfortable with that, I really suggest adding 15 or 20 minutes of flexibility at the end of your workouts. And one thing that's great about flexibility is it's relaxed, it's gentle. The way that I'm going to teach you to stretch, it isn't the sort of potentially painful go into some awkward position and hold it type of stretching that I think most of us learned in high school or somewhere during our gym career. It's a much more effective and gentle form of extending muscles, and it feels good. And it can actually be a great way to cool down from a workout. And believe it or not, it can make the workout more effective because we talked about how exercise works through adaptation, that it's your body's change after you finish exercising that actually ultimately delivers the benefit of the exercise that you've done. And that adaptation is enhanced when you take a little break and take a little time to rest and recover right after a workout, which is the perfect window to stretch. Right after a workout, your muscles are long because you've been working out and they're nice and warm. And when you stretch them out during that time, it's a great time to actually build flexibility. But it can actually help drive home the impact of the workout. So if you got the space and time and you're willing to take it on, 15 minutes or so after your current workout regimen is an awesome time to just go through some basic stretches. And you'll get a tutorial on those on a good top-to-bottom stretching program. And I hope you can put it into effect. So I touched briefly on another element of fitness, which is balance. And I want to talk about that a little bit more, balance and stability as elements of exercise. Balance and stability refer to your capacity to, you know, keep yourself upright and centered, basically to stabilize or center your center of gravity in response to whatever is going on in the world around you. If you're an athlete, this is really important, and it's something that's not trained anywhere near often enough for athletes. So every movement in sports that's like an explosive cut or, you know, a sprint forward or a jump, in order to execute that movement, you first have to stabilize your body. And a lot of athletes hemorrhage a lot of power because they're not stable. For more everyday concerns, definitely as we age, the whole idea of slips and falls, you know, it's a big one. And even more than slips and falls, a lot of people injure themselves because they're not stable. And it happens in subtle ways. So a lot of people, when their backs go out, what's really happened is they've kind of twisted at an odd angle and gotten off balance, and then the muscles of their back contract to get them back in balance, and they actually get a back spasm. And it wouldn't have happened if their internal sense of balance and stability were better. So balance and stability are really, really cool. And it's very easy to train balance and stability, and you can integrate it with your current resistance training. The way that you do that is by doing resistance training in an environment that challenges your balance. So simple example, we talked about doing overhead presses as an exercise for your shoulders. If you're comfortable with those, try doing them on one foot. Stand and do your overhead presses and just stand on one foot. In most gyms now, you'll find a lot of instability surfaces. You'll find things like Bosu balls. They're half balls that you can stand on. You'll find little pads you can stand on that are unstable. You may have actually seen people at your gyms using these things. You'll find these exercise balls, these stability balls that you can do abs on, or you can kneel on them and do different exercises once you get good at that. And it's wonderful to introduce all of that in your training. It's great because it trains you to be more stable, and it does that by teaching your nervous system how to balance all your joints and get all your muscles aligned. But also, interestingly, it adds a different dimension to your fitness training. Stabilization makes genes change their expression patterns. It makes new chemistry get produced. It burns calories. It all contributes to fitness. So instability exercises are an awesome part of a general fitness program, as well as delivering some of these other benefits. And it's a way to have a lot of fun. You know, going to the gym and sitting there and, you know, taking a cable machine and doing some rows, it can be all right. But doing it on a Bosu ball is fun. And standing on one foot on a Bosu ball is even more fun. And then there's sometimes, you know, a lot of gyms have even more advanced surfaces. They have these little wooden blocks or pads or things like that that make it even harder to stand. And it's interesting to challenge yourself in new ways. So if you're a novice exerciser, you don't worry about the instability stuff right now. But as you move forward, I really do encourage you to very quickly start just finding fun and creative ways to keep yourself off balance while you're exercising. You know, instead of doing chest presses for your chest on a bench, do them on a ball. As you get comfortable doing them on the ball, try doing them on the ball with one foot lifted up in the air and see if you can keep your core stable while you're doing the chest presses. I mentioned doing overhead presses standing on one foot. There's all sorts of fun ways to mix this up, and this is also a great thing to talk to people at the gym about or get creative. Go on Google. You know, if you Google instability exercises, you'll find a million of them. It's a dimension of fitness, balance and stability, that most people don't think about. Another related dimension is alignment. And what alignment refers to is how your joints line up in three-dimensional space. So alignment is like, do your feet point straight? Do your knees point straight? How's the arch of your back? Is your head on straight? Does your head jut forward? And this is actually a dimension of fitness. It has to do with the strength and the flexibility of your muscles. Now, tackling alignment issues is beyond the scope of this class. But I wanted to mention alignment as a component of exercise because so few people think of alignment when they think of exercise. They don't really think of the fact that, like, you know, wow, I've got knee pain, and I kind of notice my kneecap points off to the right. I wonder if that's related to my pain, and is there something I can do about that? The answer is absolutely yes. The alignment of the body is critical to its structural integrity, to the integrity of the joints and the health of the back and the health of everything. And it's profoundly affected by the way we exercise, and very few people think about this. So if you experience any kind of musculoskeletal pain, it is really worth your time to learn more about alignment and about how exercise affects alignment. And this is something you can email me about or contact me, and I can talk with you further and give you some more resources. But I'm really just throwing this one out there to put it on the radar because there's no simple system to address alignment through exercise. You really do need an expert. You need someone who can teach you, or at least you need, you know, a book and to really spend some time teaching yourself. But it's something to be conscious of. The last issue in the fabulous world of a more intelligent and more efficient exercise that I wanted to talk about is breathing. And breathing is a big one. So I want to talk about breathing in relation to normal exercise, and then I want to talk about actually training breathing. You got to breathe right while you exercise. And the simple rule for that is in any kind of resistance training, you always want to take a deep breath in during the easier part and a deep breath out during the harder part. This will help you lift more powerfully. It will protect your spine because when you breathe out, it creates a tension that protects your vertebrae. And it will actually also work with your nervous system. So what that means is during, say, a chest press, the harder part is when you're pressing the weight up away from the floor. During that chest press, during that harder part, you want to be breathing out forcefully. And, you know, it's kind of a cliche that in the old time, bodybuilders would sometimes yell when they do stuff like, when they're pressing up. That's really just a way of breathing out. Martial artists do the same thing when they punch. Ah, it's a way of breathing out. Breathing out, it creates a tension in the body that lets you lift more effectively and protects the spine. So while you're lifting weights, you should be thinking about your breathing, and it's a really great thing to train right off the bat. And the rule is you always breathe out during the hard part. The hard part is when you're moving resistance against gravity. So that can sound a little tricky to remember at first, but if you keep that in mind, it'll start to make sense to you. When you're moving resistance against gravity, you want to be breathing out. On a chest press, that would be when you're pushing the weight up away from the floor. If you're doing a pull for your back, it would be when you're pulling back and lifting the weight. If you're doing a sit-up, it would be when you're sitting up away from the floor. If you're doing a squat, it's when you're squatting up away from the floor, and you want to breathe out. You want to breathe in deeply during the easier part, which is when you're lowering the weight with gravity and controlling it on the way down. When you're doing cardio, you want to take very deep breaths. Most people breathe too shallowly all the time during the day, and they also breathe too shallowly while they exercise. And if you breathe more deeply, you're going to more thoroughly oxygenate your body, you're going to get a more effective workout, and you're going to get much, much better results. And the way you breathe deeply is you breathe into your diaphragm, into your stomach, rather than into your chest, which brings us to breathing exercises. So if you have worked with me one-on-one, or if you've taken my classes before, you've already done this, but let's review. If not, this is a great, great thing. Super simple, one of those awesome takeaways. Add something little to your life for the rest of your life. So right now, if you're listening via MP3, take a really deep breath. Just breathe in as deeply as you can. And notice what happens to your body. I'm going to do it with you. And then breathe out. And if you're like most people, what happened is that your chest just rose straight up. You took that breath in, and do it again. You can look at yourself in the mirror if you have a mirror around. Take that deep breath in, and your chest just rises straight up. And then when you breathe out, your chest falls. This is actually not a normal, healthy, or functional way to breathe. It's not the way that children breathe. If you look at little babies, they don't breathe that way. And it's not the way that hunter-gatherers breathe. It is the way that almost every adult in Western society breathes. So what is different between adults in Western society and babies and hunter-gatherers? Sitting in chairs. It's that simple. Sitting in chairs changes the way that we breathe. We are meant to breathe into the belly using a muscle called the diaphragm. And the diaphragm is a muscle in the abdomen, and when it contracts, it pulls, it kind of expands the belly, and your lungs move down into that expanded cavity, and that causes you to draw in oxygen. And when you breathe this way, some really good things happen. You get a whole lot of oxygen out of the air you breathe, because the part of the lung that fills when you breathe into the belly is very rich in the blood vessels that take oxygen out of the air and circulate it through your system. Also, interestingly, when you breathe this way, it sets up a relaxation response in the brain. It creates what's called a parasympathetic response, which calms you down and helps you kind of relax and chill out. Another interesting benefit to breathing this way is it lifts up your intervertebral discs and actually takes pressure off of your spine. Fascinating. And perhaps the last benefit is it doesn't use the muscles of your neck and shoulders at all. It lets the muscles of your neck and shoulders rest. When you take a chest breath, on the other hand, a breath into the chest through the mouth, you use the muscles of the neck and shoulders to elevate your chest, which actually stresses those muscles out. And the reason that a lot of people have so much tension around their shoulders and around their neck really truly does get down to the way that they breathe. It's interesting. I mean, there's a psychological component, but a lot of it's breathing mechanics. Also, the upper lungs, the part that's filled by a chest breath, have a much lower density of those blood vessels that exchange oxygen, so you don't get as much oxygen out of the air you breathe. When you breathe into the chest, it also puts pressure on your intervertebral discs. It presses down on your discs, and in time, this can lead to back pain, and it can lead to hernias. And then it creates a stress response in the brain. It actually creates a stress response. So chest breathing, which is what most of us do, stresses us out, bad for our muscles, bad for our back, starves the body of oxygen, all bad news. Diaphragmatic breathing relaxes us, chills us out. It's good for the spine. It's wonderful. Diaphragmatic breathing can contribute really, truly contribute to your quality of life. It can improve your physiological and psychological health. So training yourself to breathe diaphragmatically is a great, great gift to give yourself. And it's not hard to train. And the final thing I'm going to send is a breathing tutorial. It's basically a little simple exercise. It takes about 5 minutes of practice 3 or 4 times a week to train you to breathe in your stomach as a matter of habit, as a matter of reflex. And as you take this on and you learn to do this diaphragmatic breathing as a matter of habit, after a while you won't think about it and you'll breathe this way all the time. And your system will start to respond. You'll feel less stressed. You'll feel a little more clear. You'll be able to exercise a little more efficiency. It'll just be a tremendous boon to your system. And then you'll also be able to breathe that way instinctively while you're exercising, which will allow you to exercise with greater efficiency. So I said that if you're not exercising right now, biggest thing to do is take on 20 minutes 3 times a week. Just start walking. Start walking. If you can commit to a little more, do the program we're talking about. Do the warm-up, weights, and cardio. It's a 3-hour-a-week commitment. The other big thing to take on from today is adding this breathing exercise into your life. And if you've done this guy before, check in with yourself. See if you are diaphragmatic breathing. And if you're not, start doing this. And just to drive home the efficacy of this right now, I'm going to ask you to do an exercise with me. We're going to do 4 deep diaphragmatic breaths in the rhythm that I suggest. So the rhythm is going to go breathe in for about a count of 5 or 6. Hold your breath for about a count of 4 or 5, and then breathe out for about a count of 5 or 6. So I'm going to exaggerate the sound of this so that you can actually follow me in this, and follow me with the breath in, hold, breathe out. The first one I'm going to talk through, and the last 3 I'm going to do with you. So we're going to start now, and take a deep breath in with me. Hold. And breathe out slowly. And now just follow me. I'm not going to talk. And then check in on how you feel. Do you feel a little more chilled out? Do you feel a little more relaxed? Likely yes. If you don't the first time, give this a try a few times. It's a great little rhythm. It's a 5 or 6 in, around a 4 or 5 hold, and a 5 or 6 out. 4 conscious, slow, deep breaths, trying to aim the breath into the belly, trying to fill your lungs as fully as possible. And you feel that relaxation response. It's a response to the increase in the oxygen flow through your system, and it's also a neurological response. It actually happens in the brain. It's wonderful. So that is a wrap for tonight's content. I will take questions if there are any. If there are not, please put all of this into practice between now and our next class when we will dive into the mind-body connection. This is such incredibly cool stuff. And if you have questions between now and then, as always, please email info@vaughngray.com. Any questions?
Nope, I don't think so.
You're all set?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So then we are all set. If anything comes up, shoot me an email. I'll look forward to getting you these materials. They'll come out within 36 hours of class as usual. And I just wish you guys all the best for the next week. Such a great thing to put in practice. This is the time for us to get rolling. You've had 2 classes of content, which you may or may not have applied. This is the action time. It is so easy to act on putting these exercises into effect in your life because it's easier to do than not do. Nutrition requires some level of not doing. This requires doing. So if you're having trouble motivating yourself and you're having trouble getting yourself to do, here's what I suggest. Make a contract with yourself that you're going to put yourself in a situation to exercise for 20 minutes 3 times a week and do your breathing exercises, and promise yourself that if you don't feel like it when you get there, you won't do it. So if it's a warm climate, promise yourself you're going to get outside And if you don't feel like it, you're just going to take a leisurely walk or whatever. Promise yourself you're going to go to the gym. And if you don't feel like it, don't do it. But get yourself in the context 3 times a week to do at least basic cardio and basic breathing. And look at this as the week to take a positive step. Look at this as the week to put this stuff into action in your life in a new way. And I'm always available. You can always email. And just thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Yep, absolutely. Have a good night.
Okay, thanks.
Yep, bye-bye.
Bye.